And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be catching up on all the local news, all the latest news. It's going to be absolutely interesting. There's some really fascinating topics up there. We're going to be going through the breaches for the last couple of weeks because there have been so many data breaches out there that most people just don't know about. Our deep dive today is going to be on fixing our broken ID system because we're using a really antiquated ID system that hackers can penetrate really easily. I'm going to answer questions from the audience. And so sit back. It's going to be a great hour and enjoy the ride. And as always, let's start with the news. And in future tech, we're talking about passwords today, and I know you guys have heard me talk on this radio show about passwords and why we need good passwords and two-factor authentication and all that kind of stuff. But today we're looking at how we're going to be using passwords in the future, and it's actually rather fascinating. And so there's an organization in China working on using your brain as your password. Now, what I mean is, okay, like when we're coming up with a password, we're using our brain and our thought process to figure that out, and then we're typing it in. What they're talking about is actually using our brain waves to interpret like pictures. So for example, instead of logging in with your username and password, you type it in, what you would see is your username on the screen, and then you'd see a picture, I don't know, like a sailboat or something, right? How you look at the sailboat creates a brainwave pattern that is unique to you. I can't look at the sailboat and have the same brainwave pattern as you can or anybody else on the planet. And the belief is that these brainwave patterns are so unique, they're actually more unique statistically than a fingerprint or DNA would be. And that is rather fascinating. Now, some of the hurdles that they've had in developing this is, one, I mean, are we going to be wearing like brain scan hats? Like, is it a retina thing? Like, how are they going to make it easy for us to do this? Because every time I log in, I don't want to have to like stick on like a hat or a helmet or something so this thing can read my brain. Two, obviously there's the privacy thing. But one of the more interesting aspects of this as well is that as they have been doing this and testing this, if you get drunk, for example, if you are inebriated, your brain wave patterns actually change. And so you might look at the picture of the sailboat and, you know, on a normal thing and say, oh, it's a sailboat. But when you're drunk, you're like, that's a sailboat. I think I should, you know what I mean? And so you're slow. You're not reacting. You're not firing on all pistons, if you will. And so it actually won't accept you. And so, you know, that obviously is something that they have to overcome. How do you interpret this? But the interesting part is that if for whatever reason, let's say your password was stolen, somebody's able to crack around your password or steal a database where this brain scan password is, taken, it's very actually easy to fix. You just change the picture because as soon as you're not looking at a sailboat and you're looking at something else, your brainwave changes. And so it's supposed to be very, very secure. Now, we add this to things like quantum computing and all of that, and we might have a more secure future. The question is, how are they going to store the brain scans? Can they be used against us? Can they be data mined? All this kind of stuff. I mean, are we turning into the Facebook of brain scans here where they're going to sell it, you know, to a third party who studies brain scans also to advertise for you? So we'll see where that goes. But in the meantime, the future of our passwords may be brain scans. And I thought that was interesting. And in future tech news, you know, for as long as history has been around, basically since the dawn of history and humanity's been around, we've always looked up at the night sky and seen the moon and thought, you know what? We could really use a second moon. Really? You know, I don't know. I don't know if we've ever thought that, but we are actually getting a second moon and we can thank the Chinese government for that. Now, one of the cities in China is basically going to launch an artificial moon to light the city by the year 2020. That is the ambitious goal right now. And what they're doing is they're going to be launching a satellite into orbit that has highly reflective material. It'll be geosynchronized with the city. And so as the city turns into night, this satellite is going to take sunlight and reflect it back down onto the city. Now, what this is going to do is it gives off roughly 1/5 of the light of the actual moon. But what it's going to do is allow this city to cut off all of its regular streetlights and use the extra light from this artificial moon with the regular moon to light the way. And the reason why they're doing this is they believe they're going to save hundreds of millions of dollars annually in electricity bills because they don't have to fire up the street lamps and all this, and they'll have a second moon. Now, before they deploy this, they're actually doing the right thing, and they are testing this entire theory in the desert because they don't necessarily know how extra light is going to impact plants, other indigenous creatures and all of that. And so they're taking it out to the desert to see what it does at night and how it's going to possibly light the way, how it's going to affect the desert before they spin it up and deploy it over the city. But what we may see in the future in terms of efficiency to save on things like electricity bills is we might see artificial moons circling our major cities, lighting the way. And obviously some will be a lot brighter than, you know, 1/5 of total ambient light, but it is going to be our future, especially if it's cost saving, especially if it is less taxing on fossil fuels and all of that, because we're just using the sunlight, at night. So I thought that was really interesting. And that is your future tech of the day. And in Facebook news, we're going to be talking about Facebook's portal. Now, I know I mentioned this. I've mentioned this in my daily videos. I've definitely mentioned it on the air before. But what we are seeing with Facebook portal is they're going to be competing with the Amazon Echo and Google Home and Apple's. I can never remember Apple's the name of their product. They're going to be competing with all of these. But what makes portal unique is the fact that it has a built-in video camera, which, okay, a lot of them do. But this video camera is going to do two things. One, it's going to recognize you through facial recognition because Facebook is running one of the largest facial recognition databases on the planet. And if you've ever posted a picture of yourself to your account and tagged yourself in it, you are in that facial recognition database, which is something like half of the United States. But what this is going to do is it's going to follow you around the room. And so if I walk into a room and I have a Facebook portal and Facebook knows my face, it's going to recognize me. And then no matter where I go, it's going to follow me. Now, a lot of people were very much up in arms about this in the sense that, well, how do we shut off the camera? Facebook didn't have a real method for turning off the camera. After the fact, they decided to create a little lid for it so that you could physically close it so it couldn't see anything. But that's not where this stops. And what we are actually talking about today is Facebook made several claims that, oh, they're not going to sell this information to advertisers, they're not going to data mine this, all of that. They take our privacy very seriously. And then about a couple of weeks ago, from when you're listening to this, they were actually quoted by a tech news source called Recode saying, yeah, we're going to do all that. we are basically going to give this information to advertisers. And so it can scan, let's say, the room you're in, see the products you've got, watch TV with you, see what you like to watch, whether it's on Netflix or, you know, regular channels like ABC, NBC, etc. It can listen to your phone calls. It can do all of these things while tracking you, so it can send it back to advertisers. They literally just backtracked on every privacy and security claim that they made for that. And that is obviously a serious, serious issue. So the question is, would you put one of these things in your home? A lot of people are saying, absolutely not. I'm definitely not going to do that. And I think I'm in that camp. I mean, the privacy wonk in me would not be a fan of a camera that has facial recognition on me and can follow me around a room. I am not a fan of that. Not to mention the fact the whole advertising thing. I mean, we're already advertised to the nth degree using free products, and now we're literally inviting them into our home. So there you go. But if you want one, knock yourself out. Just understand you're going to be data mined to the nth degree, and that is your Facebook news of the week. And in Google news, Google just doubled down on Project Dragonfly. Now, if you're not familiar with Project Dragonfly, you might have missed my last show, which was the internet in 2028, basically what the internet's going to look like in 10 years. Google is helping to shape that, and they are working with the Chinese government on this. They created a new search engine called Dragonfly, and they're in the process of still developing this for the Chinese government. Now, what this does is it integrates into a Chinese citizen's computer, their cell phone, all of this. It's for Android. And as they search, it basically is going to monitor what they're searching, record what they're searching, tag it to their cell phone number and other personal identifiable information, and then send it over to the Chinese government. And so this coincides with China's authoritarianism when it comes to being online, because they track everybody to the nth degree. You know, they also have a social media score. So if you are looking up or searching things that are considered antithetical to the Chinese government, such as the Free Tibet movement, or if you're doing other things which are kind of off the wall, but like saying disparaging things about the government on social media, or even buying more video games, your social reputation score tends to lower, and then you get reduced use of services. So in other words, if you can't use public transportation because your social reputation score is so low, then how are you going to get to work? And that's kind of what we are talking about here. And Google has taken a lot of flack. This was a secret project within their employee base. Only a handful of employees knew about this. And when it broke company-wide, they had to have company meetings to calm everybody down. It's a serious problem. They also quietly removed the do no evil. I believe that was their motto, do no evil from their motto about a year ago or so, because they are just not living up to that promise in any way. And so we are going to continue to see a serious, serious issue with this. But Google just came out and basically said, no, we fully support this. This is the future, et cetera, et cetera. They are not stopping this development. They see China leading one half of the internet in their own way. And that is a serious threat to the rest of us. And Google is trying to play both sides. So we'll see where that ends up. But as of right now, the super sophisticated search engine that can track Chinese citizens could probably also be implemented by other governments. And so you can do the math on that. But that is your Google News of the Week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in amusing news of the week, and I got to say, this one's pretty amusing. We're going to be talking about NASA. Now, NASA, as you know, is the National Aeronautics and Space Association in the United States. And at least I think that's what NASA stands for. I'm pretty sure that's what NASA stands for. Anyway, they have the Hubble telescope. Now, if you're not familiar with the Hubble telescope, one, you really should be, because astronomy is pretty cool. Two, the Hubble telescope actually sits in orbit. It's not on the planet. And the reason being is that they want to get it away from light pollution, because, you know, if you've ever looked through a telescope and you're near a major city, you can't really see that many stars. But you get out of the planetary orbit, or rather you get out of the atmosphere, and boom, the stars open up. Now, the Hubble telescope is, I think they've spent something like $10+ billion on this thing. Now, the way they are able to move this thing and orient the telescope to look at different parts of the night sky is basically through a series of gyroscopes. Now, it has a main gyroscope, and that's how it's able to orient itself, and that gyroscope failed. It stopped working. It was malfunctioning. They don't necessarily know why. Now, the Hubble telescope also has backup gyroscopes as well. And what ended up happening is the backup wasn't working, wasn't working either. And so what do you do when you've got a 10 plus billion sophisticated computer slash telescope up there? You do what good tech support does. You reboot the thing. You turn it off and you turn it on. And so that's what they said. Let's do this. Let's reboot the telescope. And sure enough, the gyroscope came back online and all is well. Now, it's not quite as easy as flipping a switch like, you know, we would do, or, you know, clicking start and shut down and restart and all that kind of stuff. They had to do a series of specific checks and all of that, because you can't shut the full thing down. Obviously, how are you going to get it back up, et cetera, et cetera. But essentially, when you get through all the techno babble, NASA rebooted the $10 billion telescope. That's it. And I thought that was really amusing. And that is your amusing news of the week. And in video streaming news, Netflix recently is coming under fire for racially profiling its subscribers. Now, Facebook has come out and said, well, we don't collect information on our subscribers' race, which they don't. I mean, I've had a Netflix account for quite some time. But here's the situation. So basically, what ended up happening was an advertisement for a movie starring Kelsey Grammer and Kristen Bell as the main characters in this was being advertised to the African-American subscriber base, or supposed African-American subscriber base for this movie, with two black characters in the poster of the movie, not Kelsey Grammer and Kristen Bell. Now, these two black characters were actually in the movie, but they had about 10 minutes of actual screen time because the majority of the movie is Kristen Bell and Kelsey Grammer. And so basically the belief or what has come out is that as you are watching movies, it is obviously recording, tracking what you're interested in. And by virtue of that, it is believed that Netflix's AI is creating a demographic profile on you. What is your race? What is your culture? Not just your movie preferences as well. And by virtue of that, it is advertising to you in a way that it thinks is going to give maximum impact to something that is being viewed. And I'm sure that, you know, this movie with Grammer and Bell, the publisher of this movie probably pays Netflix to ensure that it is, you know, number one on the feed, so it's easily seen, so they're getting a lot of clicks and traffic and views and all this kind of stuff to boost its popularity. But at the same token, they are actually building posters that basically go and appeal to every demographic, whether it's white people, black people, whatever it is, and they're basically caught with this. And there are screenshots that have been shown. Now, obviously, Netflix comes out and says, no, you know, we haven't been doing this. We don't capture race. This is incorrect. But the evidence there is actually rather compelling, and it is legitimate. I went ahead and checked that because I like to check my sources before I talk to you guys here to make sure somebody can't come back at me and say, no, this is absolutely correct. And while, errors do happen here, this one looks pretty accurate, looks pretty legitimate, and there are actual screenshots of Netflix there, basically, with two actors that are African-American in the in the poster. So we'll see where this goes, but Netflix may actually be racial profiling you even though they don't collect your race. And so your movie habits may determine, or at least what Netflix thinks you are in terms of that. And I thought that was very interesting news, if not, kind of uncool on Netflix's part. But that is your streaming news of the week. And in presidential news, the New York Times, interestingly enough, came out with an article within the last week or two that basically said intelligence agents have confirmed, United States intelligence agents have confirmed that both the Russian intelligence and Chinese intelligence, specifically the Chinese intelligence, have been eavesdropping on President Trump's phone calls when he is using his iPhone. Now, interestingly enough, the basis of this is that when President Trump was elected president, he, unlike his predecessors, such as Obama and W. Bush, et cetera, President Trump did not want to give up his personal cell phone. Despite the warnings from cybersecurity professionals and the NSA, et cetera, he continues to use those phones that are not as secure or cannot be made as secure as a government-issued encrypted mobile phone can. And by virtue of that, what we are seeing here is simply this. It is possible to infect that like you'd be able to infect any other kind of iPhone or Android that, just the rank and file people are able to get their hands on, like you and me. And so by virtue of that, it is possible that they do have eavesdropping devices on here. Now, President Trump has come out and said, this is absolute bunk. And in a tweet, he had basically said that, this is fake news. And he has a government-issued cell phone. He never uses his personal phones. It's very, very rare, that he would do that. But he is actually adhering to what the other presidents have. And so this is essentially false. This is his statement. Ironically, when he put that out via Twitter, you could see that it was sent from an iPhone because it says a Twitter for iPhone in it. Now, is that a government-secured iPhone? You tell me. But that is both sides of the story there. The New York Times saying that he is being eavesdropped on, President Trump issuing strong denials on this over Twitter. So we'll see where this goes. But that is your presidential news of the day. And this is your mobile phone news of the week, and this affects both iPhone and Android. Now, what's really interesting is a recent article came out that was discussing about uninstalling apps. Now, we've all seen an app in the App Store or Google Play, and I'm just going to use App Store generically here for both, but you see it in the App Store, and you're like, ooh, this is interesting. I'm going to download this. Maybe it's a game. Maybe it's a productivity app. Maybe it's something else, and you've decided at some point, I no longer want to play this game. It's not making me productive, whatever that is, and you've uninstalled it. Well, there is such a thing as an uninstall tracker, and a lot of these apps have this. Now, the way this works is it's a third-party company, and there are a few of these that basically integrate themselves into the app development. So if you are developing an app for iPhone or Android, you would use this service integrated into your programming. And so when your app is uninstalled, you basically get alerted that you have been, that your program has been uninstalled. Now, the way this works is it's upstream of the phone. It's nothing that's actually integrated into the phone. But when you install an app, basically that app creates a unique signature for itself that tags itself to your phone and then sends that back via like a heartbeat. Like it's just pinging like, hey, I'm here every periodically, to a server that then ties that to you. It ties it to the app. It ties it to the developer. And if you uninstall that app, what ends up happening is you sever that connection, that pinging, that alerting to that remote server that's gathering information on you stops. And so now that remote server says, oh, wait a second, I'm no longer receiving a signal from, you know, this app, from this phone, from this developer. Obviously, it was uninstalled, and then that alerts the developer to go ahead and push advertising to you to say, hey, we want you back. Like, why'd you install our app? You know, that kind of thing. And so even if you're uninstalling apps, you're not necessarily done with the company that had that. They are tracking you in the cloud and beyond your phone by virtue of integrating this technology into the app. Now, these companies were basically questioned by this in the article that I wrote, and none of them responded except for one who basically said, well, that's not what our technology is for. We don't know any cases of this doing it, but security researchers are actually able to track the traffic back and see what it was doing and how it was doing it. And so we know that this is actually going on. So if you have an Android or an iPhone, odds are you're being tracked by apps, or possibly rather being tracked by apps that you have uninstalled in the past. And if you uninstall something now, there's a good chance it's going to start tracking you as well. So that is your Android and iPhone news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me. And I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And we're going to dive right into the breaches from the last couple of weeks because it is absolutely crazy. It is usually nonstop, and it is over and over and over. And a lot of people don't know these things, like I said. So let's keep going, and let's get this going, actually. That's what I meant to say. We're going to start with Cathay Pacific. Now, Cathay Pacific, if you don't know, is a major airline that is based out of Asia, and they fly globally. They just had a data breach that included names, birthdays, passport numbers, et cetera, for 9.4 million customers. So if you are flying with Cathay Pacific, you might want to contact them and check to see if you were involved in that, because that obviously is a massive number, and that may be their entire user base of those people using Cathay Pacific Airlines. The next one we're going to go to is Raleigh's Pharmacy. It might be Raleigh's Pharmacy. I'm not sure. But if you're in the Northern California area, like Sacramento or so, this is one of your pharmacies of choice. They have a large presence in Northern California. They are a chain, a regional chain. Basically, what ended up happening with them is they had a laptop that was stolen, and this stolen laptop had 10,000 medical records on it, and so they have to declare a HIPAA breach. This is by law what they have to do when you have personal information. Also, interestingly enough, and on a complete aside, if they have portable laptops and other portable devices, according to HIPAA compliance, you're supposed to fully encrypt it. So, for example, my laptop is fully encrypted, and if I have HIPAA data on there and somebody steals it, I don't have to report that. I don't have to disclose that. You know, and that, what is it going to cost me? About $150 for an encryption program to secure that data. But because they had an unsecured laptop, here we are talking about Raley's Pharmacy in Northern California, or Raley's. I'm not actually sure. I've never been there. So anyway, the next one we're going to talk about is Yahoo. Now, if you guys remember, in 2013, Yahoo suffered a major data breach, and they kept upping the number. But eventually, and I'm not going to go through the whole saga, Yahoo said, yeah, we've had 3+ billion mailboxes and accounts compromised by Russian hackers. That Russian hacker was eventually extradited into the United States from Canada and confessed to the whole thing, which was actually rather fascinating. But the reason why we're updating this is because Yahoo has decided to settle the agreement, and they have decided to pay out $50 million. And so if you have a Yahoo account, or rather had a Yahoo account in 2013, you may be eligible to receive $100 from this settlement. And you probably have to apply and jump through some hoops, but you can get $100. The lawyers got $35 million, because that's how that works. The rest of us, $100. And so if you, again, have a Yahoo account, you can get $100 if you're willing to figure out how to do it. The next one we're going to move on to is Aadhaar. And I say that because there's a lot of A's in that. I think it's Aadhaar. This is one of the largest databases on the planet and had been considered the second largest data breach when it was disclosed earlier this year. Now, earlier this year, a cybersecurity company called Gemalto basically released a statement saying that Aadhaar was breached. It was vulnerable. They could walk right in, and this is billions of records on, you know, billion plus, you know, Indian citizens and some others. And they just had to, in the last few days, walk that back. Gemalto issued a public apology saying, yes, the breach actually was not, it wasn't this. We made a mistake. And so Aadhaar, the second largest breach, is the second largest breach that never was. And so that's good news for, you know, India and its citizens. Not so much good news for Gemalto. And that just kind of underscores to me like why we really need to make sure that we are we are checking everything as we are going along. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.